Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
The bad and the dumb time on a throwback Thursday where we go back to 1999 for the first BCS National Championship game in college football. I'm sure that felt good, but it wasn't the good of the day. Well, take it away, Ron Cole.
Well, you know, you were kind of hinting about it earlier about, you know, just a lot of the teams that are playing this weekend will not be playing with the quarterbacks that started week one.
Right.
But there is a good that's out there that we all probably can rally behind and probably root for. And that is for Kevin Stefanski.
Okay.
Because he is in position to become the first coach to win with five different starting quarterbacks this season.
That is pretty awesome. Good for him.
Now, I'm struggling. I was sitting here when I wrote this down. I was like, all right, well, I can't think of the fifth one.
Yeah, who was the fifth one?
If it becomes the fifth one would be Jeff Driscoll, obviously. But, I mean, we got Joe Flacco. We got P.J. Walker.
And Dorian Thompson.
Dorian, thank you. That's the one I was looking for.
That's the one. No, the one I was wondering was who. I forgot who was starting this weekend for Joe Flacco.
Oh, Jeff Driscoll.
Jeff Driscoll. So five different starters. And if they win,
he would be the first.
I don't know if they will or not because, I mean, who knows what these rosters look
right.
like. They would have 12 victories.
Yeah.
They would have 12 victories with five different starting quarterbacks.
Good
for him.
I mean, it's unreal to think about. And the other thing, you know, just piggybacking off that, I had mentioned it too yesterday. I think I only mentioned it off air, though. I mean, there is a remote possibility of having a Browns-Lions Super Bowl.
It's very realistic. I'm sorry. I know people love the Ravens, but I'm telling you, the Browns could give the Ravens fits.
Yeah.
They could.
They're playing incredible right now.
They're playing very good football. Their defense is outstanding. They are division rivals, meaning they know the other team inside and out. Joe Flacco wins playoff games. That has been his whole career. Now, 39 Joe Flacco, I don't know. But Joe Flacco's career has always been mediocre regular season, but get him in the playoffs, he gets you far.
Yeah.
That's always been Flacco's MO. And so don't count this Browns team out. And the Lions, you never know what Dan Campbell motivates that team to do.
Right.
You just do not know.
And all I'm thinking about is that if you and I 5 years ago said, hey, 5 years, Lions-Browns Super Bowl.
Oh, sure.
We would have never thought, yeah, right.
You never would have guessed it.
You know, the two teams that went defeated can be in
the Super
Bowl.
They haven't been in 57 of them. Why would we think that they would be in anytime soon?
But that would be fantastic. But
yeah. That would be great.
Kevin Stefanski could be the first coach to win with five starting quarterbacks, and that just blows my mind.
I'm telling you, the Browns, I can't stress this enough. Take it from a guy who's in the division. They are terrifying. Mm-hmm. Terrifying.
Well, you know
the
what's
way they're playing right now.
You want to know why it's scary? Because we wrote their season off when Chubb went down.
Right. Right.
When
Week
he
two.
Went down, that was done. It was like, yeah. You know what?
You
lost your running game. You're going to win a few here and there, but that was the devastating, that was the nail in the coffin for the Browns this season.
Yeah. I mean, they beat Jacksonville, Chicago, Houston, and the Jets. And Jacksonville and Houston have winning records. The Bears are playing better right now, and they beat them. And the Jets stink, but still, they beat them. And again, it really, like I was talking about yesterday, Flacco, you can almost say, look, the problem with hindsight is that it's 2020. That's the old cliche. I can understand why the Jets didn't call Flacco. I get it. When he was there, he was not good. He was not good with the Broncos, and he was not good for them. I get it. So now it looks like a bad decision because he's playing so good with the Browns, but it could be a number of reasons why he's good with the Browns, and he may not have been good with the Jets. Who knows? But you can't help but think if he could have won two more games for the Jets at a critical time, then maybe Rodgers does return. If he could return, who knows? But what he's done with the Browns, I never saw this from a mile away. I mean,
it was an afterthought. I mean, even when they first signed him.
Right.
You were like,
he was a practice squad guy, just in case of emergency,
yeah,
go to him.
Break glass.
He has been phenomenal for them. Again, throws picks, but throws touchdowns. Big play guy. The offense looks completely different. It's a remarkable story. And this is, I mean, the Browns have, they don't, since their reincarnation, they've only had two playoff appearances, and both times were kind of like, barely got in. Baker Mayfield had a good season. This is a solid Browns team that's going to the playoffs, a really solid Browns team that's heading to the postseason. So, yeah, good for Kevin Stefanski and that team never giving up, because we as fans, we give up when things go bad, but they know it's a long season. And the one thing NFL teams, and you hear it a lot because a lot of these guys are having podcasts now, you hear it more and more as these guys have talked about how, look, this is not college football. We are professionals. There are professionals on the other side. We are not, you know, like, we can win games. We can win games number of different ways. They're saying, like, you may give up, but we're not giving up. And that's the Browns. I mean, you could have cashed in all your chips with the amount of turnover at the quarterback position. But the fact that they could win 12 games with five different starting quarterbacks is crazy. Because some teams get to start change quarterbacks, and it's confusion and cadence disrupted, yep, and you know, mess, and we're not on the same
and
page.
We do have to throw in there your star running back being out the entire season.
Your star running back is down, right? But they knew their defense was good enough. We could just stay in games. The defense will keep it in check. And we'll be able to figure out ways to win games. And they figured out ways to win games. So good for them. All right, what is the bad of the day?
The bad of the day, Tony, this is the sign of the times. The Patriots, for the first time since 2000, are without a Pro Bowl player.
Ah, here we go. Now we're back to the Rod Rust, Dick McPherson days.
That's it. This team is officially, you know, can we say, like, you know, for a lot of people, the worst team in history for New England.
This is a very bad season.
Not one Pro Bowler. Even last year when the team wasn't looking that good, they still had a Pro Bowler here and there. And we can't count. We have to go off of now. We can't count like when, hey, so-and-so opts out, we can bring this guy along. No, we're not going to do that.
No, not even like a defensive player.
No, no one.
Got in on this. Nope. Yeah, well, you
know.
Not
even a special teamer, and I mean,
it all comes to an end.
Yep, the gravy train is the ride is over.
It really is. It really is remarkable.
And there,
I knew the Patriots weren't going to be as good without Brady. I think everybody figured out. I did not think that they would be at the bottom of the barrel, scraping out the bottom of the barrel with that head coach.
Yeah.
I really thought that guy, he may not make all the right decisions, but he wasn't going to make all the wrong ones. And this team is a mess.
And it wasn't one of those situations either this year where it was like, you know what, we can give them the benefit of the doubt because, you know, hey, you're in these games, you're losing by, you know, you're within seven every single game. You know, the ball just didn't go your way this game, or, you know, where we've had teams that have had that happen. Like the Chargers a few years ago, we didn't really say the Chargers were a bad team, even though they kept losing these games by 3 points. Like, they kept the other team was just too close, and they couldn't get over that hurdle at the end. Patriots just stunk outright.
They had lost to Dallas by a ton. They were shut out by the Saints this season. Yeah, there was like a 6-0 game they lost, and there were a couple of games that was tight. But for the most part,
some of these losses were embarrassing.
They weren't good. They weren't a very good team, and that's why Belichick is going to be. I'm telling you, this is a breakup. It's coming up.
And, you know, the whole quarterback issue is like, well, let's go with this guy. Let's go back to this guy. Let's go back to Mac Jones. Let's go back to Bailey Zappi. I mean. You know, when you see a team start doing that, there's a lot of panic and just, you know, throwing darts at a board and saying, hopefully this works.
It's, to me, I think it's just time. It's just time. I'm sorry. I know there are people in the league and people who have had relationships with Belichick, played for him, that are now on TV and whatnot and saying things like, oh, yeah, well, I get it. But come on, can we all just stop for a second? So these things they're not meant to last forever. They're not meant to be a permanent job. This isn't a place where you start off as a 25-year-old and then you retire at 65 and you get a gold watch. You are made to be fired in this business. That's how it goes. You can't keep success. The fact that they had 20 years is remarkable. I mean, it's remarkable, but it's coming to an end. If you are Robert Kraft, you're the Kraft family. you've got to have something to look forward to, which is maybe a different voice, maybe a different person. And even if that doesn't work out, it gives us the option of finding another voice or something. But this guy cannot build a team. We have given him 4 years to build a team without Tom Brady, and he has not done so. The one time we made the playoffs, we got humiliated by Buffalo. We're not playing good football. We're playing horrible football. We're going to have the second or third pick in the draft. No Pro Bowlers. Worst record in the AFC. It's time for a new voice. Thank him for everything. Give him a statue. Everything. Yeah. Do all the things. Pay for his check when he shows up at a restaurant. But it's time to part ways.
It is.
We've seen plenty of teams do this in the past. All right, the dumb is coming up next. We continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
It's been 1 week since you looked at me. Cocked your head to the side and said I'm angry. 5 days since you laughed at me, saying get that together, come back and see me. 3 days since the living room, I realized it's all my fault, but couldn't tell you. Yesterday, you'd forgiven me, but it'll still
be this is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, 1999 is our Throwback Thursday, going back 25 years. Today is the BCS National Championship Game premiere. Tennessee and Florida State, first one. 1 versus 2, computer rankings, all of those things. And that's our Throwback Thursday today. Who is this, Smash Mouth, or is this what was the other group?
Bare Naked Ladies.
Bare Naked Ladies. They're like kind of the same.
Kinda,
all right.
Yeah.
What is the dumb of the day as we continue Good, the Bad, and the Day?
The dumb of the day, Tony, and I know that you're all about this one.
Okay.
Roy McIlroy has completed the 180 on Liv.
I knew it. I knew it was coming. I saw this yesterday, and I knew it was coming.
He finally admitted that he might have been too judgmental on the players who were opted for the big payday, that not all the players make what he or Tiger makes. And so, yeah, the 180 is complete.
You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of a political debate, right? Where you have two people running for president. And on stage, they're like, and he stole money from, and then they just start going at each other, right? And then you're in the crowd, and you're rooting for your candidate. And you're like, yeah, throw jail, blah, blah, blah. And you're so excited. And then after the debate, they shake hands, and they're laughing and, you know, patting each other on the back, shaking hands with the families, doing things like that. And you realize it was your emotion supporting your candidate is not the same as the candidate you're supporting. Like, in the end, they're all friends. This is mm-hmm. all part of the business. But you're emotional. You want your guy to win. You think the other guy's the devil. You think the other guy will destroy the country. But they don't think that. And that's what's happening here. Anybody that sort of fed off Rory McIlroy's pure, raw emotion on Liv, it's going to destroy golf. They're greedy, blood money, all those things. And
betrayal.
To the average fan, betrayal. The average fan that is seeing this going, yeah, I see it. How could you take Saudi money? Awful. The human rights violations, all of those things. They're destroying golf. Greedy golfers. Blah, blah, blah. Kick him out of the Ryder Cup. We don't need him. And then he comes back about a year later and like, yeah, you know, I don't know. Maybe I just was like too harsh.
Well, it was after he saw John Rahm bolt.
That's it. Once John Rahm went, he went, uh-oh, there's something to this.
And just, I guess, just recently, after John Rahm called for the DP World Tour to rewrite the rules for the Ryder Cup eligibility.
The second it happened, he was all on board like, no, we ain't losing him.
We need John Rahm. He needs to play in the Ryder Cup.
You know, I'm going to be a captain of this thing in a couple of years. I want guys like him.
I'm going to fight for him right now.
You know, I mean, I completely... Look, do I understand what Rory is saying? Everybody can have a moment of reflection.
Yeah,
everybody can change your mind.
You're about to change your heart.
You know, you don't change your heart. I get it. And
you know, but, I mean, we just saw a whole bunch of specials on that over the Christmas vacation. That's what, you know, that's what makes the Grinch so great.
That's right.
His heart grew 3 times bigger, and
he robs the town and then they let him carve the roast beast. That's basically how it works. But I think Rory
do you think part of this is coming out because he I'm sure Liv has approached him.
No, I think it. I hear where you're going. I think that what he's seeing is a landscape where Liv and the people involved in Liv are going to be heavily involved in world golf. And I think it is a tidal wave. He is not stopping. And I think he's realizing, I have a lot of friends.
Can't beat him, join him.
Right. I think his most important line was when he said, I realize not everyone is in my position or in Tiger's position. And I think that was the thing. That was a realization that guys want this level of generational wealth. It's really not about getting more planes and yachts. It's not that. It is setting up your family for generations. They will be the most powerful, wealthy people of wherever they live, right? That this money will increase exponentially if it's invested correctly, that great-grandchildren will be having funds. You know, I was telling my daughter about this with Tiger Woods' kid, Charlie, and I said, you know, when Charlie turns 18, I saw a report where he's already got $25 million from his father's trust fund. I mean, and plus a lot more, but he's already going to start life with $25 million. As soon as he turns 18, he gets access to the money that his father put away. And all of his kids have $25 million. Same with Mickelson's kids. But you're talking about being able to do this for great-grandchildren, children beyond that, with this level of money.
Tiger, the fortune that Tiger was able to draw just from playing this simple little game, right? I mean, it's remarkable. I mean, it'll be, like you said, I mean, it's generational. It'd be like as if Washington's kids, you know, had the money, you know, right. like he was able to leave stuff. Their kids would just be sitting back doing nothing now.
And Rory is realizing that, you know what? I got that from playing DP World Tour and majors and PGA Tour, and Tiger got that. But you know what? A lot of guys that are on this, they're not that. Like Rory feels that his talent is going to keep him relevant in the game for 20 years. You know how many golfers have won a major and then disappeared off the face of the earth?
You know one that brings up, when you're saying that, the first name that always pops in my mind is Ernie Els.
Sure. But Ernie Els is a two-time British Open champion and a two-time U.S. Open champion.
And he was the rival of Tiger Woods for a long period of time. And then all of a sudden, just like in a blink of an eye, never even hear of him.
Yeah, that is...
I don't know, does he even still play? That's how gone he is.
He's 50-something years old.
No, so I know, but yeah. I mean, that's how quickly it disappeared. Like, I couldn't even tell you when he stopped playing.
I'm talking about guys like Rich Beam, like guys like Sean McKeel, like Wayne Grady. These are all major champions who disappeared off the face of the earth. Rich Beam is in broadcasting. I think plays on the Champions Tour.
Who's the one Masters guy? Not Trevor Immelman.
Charles Schwartzel.
No, not him.
He's on Live making $4-5 million a year.
Oh, Willett.
Oh, Danny Willett.
Is it Willett or Willett?
Danny Willett. So he's realizing that some of these guys, their money won't last to the third or fourth generation, right? So I think there's some of that. But I also think he sees, look, this is a tidal wave that's not going, they're not disappearing, they're not going away. He probably really did believe, when he said it's not going to make it, et cetera, he probably believed it. And when they launched and they're doing these 54-hole tournament things and they're not on television and it looked kind of silly and they're on YouTube and he probably thought this is a joke.
And let's be real. You know, we mentioned, I mean, it's easier to turn back to the dark side, I guess, if you will, you know, according to Rory, when, you know, one of your best golfers on your team flips, but also when the organization itself flips.
Yeah.
It kind of makes it easier to become more accepting of Liv when, you know, when we had that announcement back in, what was that, June?
June, yeah.
When PGA and Liv announced, we're going to get together. And we're going to create something unified. And, you know, for Rory at that moment, maybe that's probably when the wheels started turning. Like, you know what? I better change my attitude towards this because there's no stopping it.
Taylor Gooch made $36 million on Liv last year. $36 million. That's what he made out of the $300 million prize pool. Now, you can't make $36 million in prize money on tour. What you can do is make $60 million in endorsements and everything like that. But prize money,
mm-hmm.
You're not winning $36 million in prize money.
Unless you have an incredible
season. You have to win
pretty
much every event.
Yeah.
Right? Every event you enter, you have to be in the top three of every event. You're not winning $36 million. Charles Schwartzel, he won the first event in London, made $4.75 million. Like, all of a sudden, you start, like, okay, this isn't going anywhere. This is going to be a factor. This is going to be a big deal. But I think he also is like, you know what? If more of my friends go to this, I'm not going to have any friends. And I like these guys. I really, really like Rom. I like these. And now they're all going. Mm-hmm. They're taking the money. What is it? $600 million, $500 million for these? It's crazy.
Oh, yeah. Rom got, what, $300
million? $300 million.
Just to go and play.
Right. So.
And that's why I sit there, too. I wonder, like Rory doesn't need it, but I'm wondering. There's a part of me that wonders if Liv has reached out to Rory. Now that they got Rom for $300 million, I mean, you kind of have a dollar in mind.
You can get Rory for half a bill.
Yeah.
Right. But it's something we've said since this thing started. The guy that has been quiet is Phil Mickelson. The guy who could take victory lap after victory lap was Mickelson. He said it was going to work. He said it was going to be the future of golf. Everyone laughed at him. He became a villain, but he became a villain for the cause he really believed in shaping the game. And now Liv has John Rahm.
Well, I mean, not only that, but I mean, you know, the other thing to credit Phil with was that he called out all those things that were wrong with the PGA.
That's right. He certainly did.
And the PGA is now rethinking it all. Like, maybe we should change this or that and this and that.
Excellent. Well, I had a funny feeling Rory was coming around. He's going to end up coming around. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio on a Throwback Thursday.